Immigration, legal and not, is always a rumble in the national discourse, even if it's not directly in that day's news. And it is just that much more a discussion topic now that President Trump has ended DACA, Delayed Action for Childhood Arrivals, people who have lived in America for years but came here as children outside the legal immigration process. Our first guest this hour not only knows the story, she lives it. Maria de Los Angeles is herself one of the dreamers, and her artwork, drawings and paintings on canvas and on clothing, depicts her feelings about the immigration debate. Her work is now on display at the Schneider Museum of Art at Southern Oregon University, and we're glad to have her in the studio today. Maria, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for having me, and thank you to JPR for having this conversation with me.
Very much a pleasure. How did you make the connection with Southern Oregon University and get your stuff displayed at the Schneider Museum?
You never know who you meet and how you're going to run into them later, but Scott Malburn, who's the director of the museum right now, he used to be part of the Pratt community and be assistant chair or something like that.
At the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm. While I was a student there.
Oh, okay. So that was the connection. And he said, hey, let's bring Maria here. So let's start in the present and go back for an extended period. So if people go to the Schneider Museum, what will they see?
They'll see close to... Well, I gave the museum 1,400 drawings, and I think most of them are up, and 3 9-foot-tall garments that are constructed with canvas and paint and collage.
Garments? I mean, we're talking dresses here?
Yeah, they're like monumental sculptures, so you would think it more of as like the Greek columns or statues or fragments of statues. So they're really tall, but technically I could put one of them on. It's just 9 foot tall, the full dress.
Your art really speaks your experience, and I've heard you claim that you're not an activist, but it seems like your art is an activist anyway.
Well, I think artists, by default, if they choose to engage, their work speaks to it. And even if they choose not to engage, it also speaks about a certain feeling that they live with, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like better, because I don't speak necessarily through myself, but to speak through art, I think for me, it's more peaceful.
I think I read a tidbit online, and there's the usual Google check on any guest who's coming in about, was it at Yale that some professor said your art needs to speak about your experience and can't just be about, you know, stuff?
Yeah, so I was very much into just painting traditional figurative drawing and traditional stuff, and when I went to Yale, there was a lot of discussion about who you are and what your work's about conceptually and also in terms of the theme. And Robert Reed, who's no longer with us, he was a friend of mine, and I was a student assistant for his class. I was his co-teacher, he would say. And we had a long conversation about, you know, what I wanted from my work. And I realized that my work was not about me. That if you put anybody else in front of it, that they could claim it. So I had to think about, what is it that I want to talk about?
And what you wanted to talk about was?
My life experience, mm-hmm. Right? Coming here to the United States as a younger child, and now I'm 29 years old, and just being undocumented was never something you would speak about. So going from something you don't talk about, almost shameful, to having thousands of drawings around the conversation in a museum is a big step.
I was going to ask you how big a turning point that was. I mean, and I imagine for people in your situation, there was a lot of just trying to stay low and invisible and stuff. And so was it at the instigation of a professor, or was there something else that made you go, that's it, I'm going this in public?
Well, we had DACA, so we felt a little bit more comfortable speaking out and also just telling people who we are, so people realize that we're not just some stereotype, that they might actually know us, that we might actually be your friend. And I just got fed up with it, and I wasn't really drawing about it, and I was really frustrated. I guess I can relate it to when a writer is kind of locked in and they can't really write what they want.
Writer's block?
I had that
mm-hmm.
for an artist. And so you're just lost.
So let's go back in time then. I mean, you were 11 when your family ended up in the Santa Rosa area?
Yeah, so at 11, my family one day said we're leaving, and the next day or so, my father left, and then my mother followed with us. And we came to Tijuana from southern Mexico, from Tabasco, very far south, which is across all of Mexico, and then to Tijuana. And there we waited, and then this lady picked us up, and she smuggled us through the border as her children. And since we didn't speak English, because that would be the first question, you go through the checkpoint, they will speak to us. They put us to sleep with sleeping medicine, like Tylenol PM or something.
Mm-hmm. Tylenol PM. All right, so you guys just slept right there.
I don't even know what it was.
Wow.
But we were asleep, and then I woke up in Los Angeles, and she's like, oh, I'm dropping you guys off at your aunt's, and your parents will arrive shortly.
And then how long in Los Angeles before you ended up in Santa Rosa?
So about 3 or 4 days. My mom crossed through the border, like by foot. And my father was already in the States at that time. And then he came by, and then my mother arrived. And then about a week later, we came up north to Santa Rosa.
So what was that like? I mean, we're talking new language, new culture, new school, new people, essentially new everything, new life completely.
Yeah, so my parents had agricultural businesses, so we travel a lot in Mexico. That meant that I wouldn't really finish it sometimes a year. And when you don't finish a year there, you have to start over again the same year. So I repeated like first grade like a large number of times. And by the time we came here, I was 11 and I was in second grade over there. And I had studied. They were going to take me to sixth grade. And I was really angry because my parents were taking that opportunity from me. Because the school was going to be like, oh, take a test. You've studied. We'll put you in sixth grade. And I thought that I had lost that. So that whole way up, I was like really upset. And when I arrived here, I entered seventh grade, which is middle school, in a new language. I didn't have any, I had basic calculation, math, no history really. Not much behind me.
How did you get so proficient in English so fast? I mean, because you ended up being a pretty good student, right? Didn't you?
So I learned really fast that I had to pretty much try to be the best student. So I would ask questions. I would do extra credit for my math class. I would come and like help the teacher in the classroom and he would give me extra handouts. And then by the time I reached ninth grade, I could speak it and understand it. It wasn't perfect. And I don't think still perfect.
But pretty well. We can certainly understand you easily enough. We're talking to Maria de Los Angeles, artist, activist, dreamer. Her display called Transcending Myths hangs right now on the walls at the Schneider Museum in Ashland. Something like 1,400 drawings, some on panels, some on dresses. And you can see them at the museum through, well, part of March anyway. We'll get the ending date nailed down before the program's over. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Maria. And you can join the conversation by phone or by email. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking with the artist Maria de Los Angeles, visiting Ashland for a few weeks while her work hangs at the Schneider Museum. She is a dreamer. If you're wondering, who are the dreamers? Who are these people who came to the country illegally as children? She is one of them and got through the American school system and has done well in post-high school education and put a lot of art out there in the world, a lot of it very specifically about the immigration struggle in America. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. What I haven't asked you yet, Maria, is when in your life you began making art? When did that start for you?
Since I was really little. I just drew. I didn't take classes until I got to the United States in seventh grade. But it was always what I liked to do.
And so were you encouraged? I mean, obviously your life got a little disjointed by moving to the United States at age 11. So did you take up art right away in Santa Rosa, or were you more focused on learning language, doing well in the other classes?
I had to do all of it. And then art just sort of became what took me through it because I realized I could pursue this. I could study and take classes and maybe go to school for it if I could end up going to school, because that was a question back then. So it just became every student needs something that they're into to kind of pull them through, and that was for me art.
That really worked for you then. And then what media do you tend to work in? It's a bit of painting and a bit of drawing, it sounds
so
like.
I draw a lot. It's kind of my main thing, drawing, watercolor, ink, figurative drawing, all kinds of drawing. And then I paint as well, which is based through drawing technique and color. It's very colorful paintings. And then I'm building the sculptures. But for me, the base is always going to be drawing.
I was telling you as you came in here before we got on the air about noticing from the videos that you are left-handed. And you said you had a teacher who wanted you to draw with your other hand.
Yeah, so I'm left-handed, and I've sort of been left-handed, but some things I do with my right, and then as a lesson, because sometimes when you draw too much, you get kind of caught up in the same routine. I would have, my teacher would switch my hand, and I would have to draw only with my right.
Did that force you to deconstruct what you were doing as an artist?
Yeah, you have to slow down, and then I think that there is a way that you think differently. Or somehow your brain is structural. I draw more structurally, less rhythm, more structure. I don't know.
So was it a worthwhile exercise then to go with your right hand?
I think it's really good. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for people to try if they're having a hard time and their sketches look the same every time.
So while your art was developing, I mean, you're working your way through school. You got through high school. You went to two high schools in Santa Rosa, is that right?
My LC Allen high school education was a little short because I couldn't get into the painting class because I wasn't good enough. And so I took myself out of that and transferred myself to Santa Rosa High School where I graduated from, to try to go to an arts program there, but I was kind of at the end of it, so people were working on their portfolios. So the person who actually taught me some art was the regular art teacher at the school, not the program. And then my friend, who I met in middle school, was going to Santa Rosa Junior College, and he was like, come with me, take some art classes. And that's what I did.
So you had the opportunity after junior college to move on to some bigger and better places, and you have learned, it seems like, to overcome some obstacles in your life. Talk about getting money for college without documents indicating that you were legal.
Yeah, so I graduated from Santa Rosa Junior College with my associates in 2010 or so, and I applied for undergraduate school. I applied for like 11 universities, and I got into like something like 9. And I couldn't go to the UC system because they only took people with papers because they didn't have California Dream Act. So I couldn't get financial aid. As an undocumented person, and this is still the case in many states, you can't get financial aid. So I applied to all these 11 schools, got into the UC system, Berkeley, which I really wanted to go to. And I got into Chicago Art Institute, RISD, Pratt Institute, and a few other places. And I didn't really get scholarship. Because my portfolio wasn't up to notch, right? I'm competing with these really schooled kids who maybe had like a private tutor or are really good. So I called the schools and I was like, hey, I want to come to your school. Give me a scholarship, a bigger one. And many of the schools said no. But Pratt Institute, after I told them my background, what I wanted to do, they talked to each other and they gave me like 50% of the tuition, which was about $25,000. And they said, please raise the rest of the money. You have to match it. So that summer, Press Democrat, my friends there, and then all the community from Santa Rosa, Oakmont, all these people came out and bought my work, even some of my teachers.
So you raised $25,000 in one summer.
Yeah, Paradise Rich Winery hosted an art show. Jack Lyserine's private studio, he's a private art collector, was like, I'll put stuff on my walls. I'll invite all my collector friends, and I raised the rest of the money. My favorite professor, Alan Asadarian, who teaches at SRJC, was like, you got in, like, good job. How are you going to get the money? And I was like, I have no idea. My parents don't got that money. And we did it. And then after my first year at Pratt, they gave me pretty much a full scholarship with everything covered.
That's the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, which is a highly prestigious art school.
Yeah, and I did 3 years there because I was a transfer student. Mm-hmm. Which pretty much means that I got to do all art lessons, everything that I wanted, because I had done like undergrad associate's degree. So I had done my prerequisites. And then I graduated from there in 2013 with my bachelor's degree of fine arts in painting, drawing, printmaking, basically. And I applied to graduate school, and I applied to three schools. A very traditional atelier school in New York, which I'm probably happy that I didn't go to, because I wanted to be a traditional painter, part of me. And then I applied to RISD, which I didn't get into, but I got into Yale. And Yale has a huge endowment, so they were able to provide me with a scholarship when I was there. And that was kind of my kind of... I didn't figure it out. Alan just gave me, my professor from SRJ gave me a list of schools and was like, apply to all these schools. Mm-hmm. And in that list, there were these top schools that have money that are private. And so I figured out, I want to apply to Yale. If I get in, they have an endowment. And they did.
So you got an education.
Yeah. And I didn't get loans because I didn't qualify for them. And I didn't qualify for financial aid from the government. So I ended up not owing money. Which is a big deal because
sure.
Now a lot of people from my background are getting into huge amounts of debt. Like they owe so much money that they'll never own a house.
Maria de Los Angeles is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Artist, activist, dreamer, came to the country at age 11 from Mexico. Her work now hangs in the Schneider Museum of Art on the Southern Oregon University campus in a display called Transcending Myths. It's up through March 17th. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's talk about what's in your art. It is abstract, but it's definitely representational. You can see people there, human figures. And what are the themes generally?
Labor, migration, family, some amount of violence, enforcement. I have a lot of ice figures. Like, I have characters, and my characters range from real humans to some skeletons that are across migrating, which I'm gonna do a book about migration, illustrated, like an artist book. And then I also have little border patrols, little policemen. I have... It's like a narrative. It's like a whole story, but you see the panels are just kind of scattered, so they're not linear. So you get to read whatever story you want, and they're placed next to each other. But I eventually, I'm going to do an artist book and a children's book about the subject.
You say you depict the immigrants as skeletons?
I have characters that I came up with. My culture likes Día de los Muertos and all that, so these are three skeletons. And I felt that was better to have them migrate than to have real people migrate. Because then I would have to depict them and how they look. And I think that, for me, that's like a base of humanness. We all, like, pretty much have a skeleton. And I think it's a cute way. They're not gruesome. They're a cute way to kind of talk about it. And also to talk about some of the harshness of it all, you know? And then it's pretty much, in a way, it's like I borrow from comics. I borrow from illustrations. I borrow from Francisco Goya. I borrow from some of the muralists. And it's, in a way, social realism, but it falls more closely into comics and watercolor, like traditional watercolor mm-hmm. studies.
When you talk about the harshness of it, I mean, have you had some close calls yourself where you or people you know close to being deported? Or?
Yeah, I know some people who have had to go through that. And then I know some friends now that are really upset, you know, and they're going through all the system. And even, you know, it has been difficult for my family, like even applying for things. You have to go through all these steps and pay all this money. And for myself, like many other DACA people, we still don't have a real thing. This is not real. DACA is not real. And it's no longer really active, even though we still have our permits. So that's not going to fix our future. And I've been undocumented since 11. I'm 29 years old now. And after a while, when you're ill, like if you have a sickness and you don't tell your doctor and that sickness is in your body, you feel ill and it starts to get bigger and then it gets psychologically bigger. So that's the only way that I can compare the psychological impact of being pretty much trapped. I haven't seen my family in Mexico. My work is not about Mexico. It's about here. Because I grew up learning from Jewish teachers and some other types of countries, other types of people. But I didn't grow up from learning from Mexican artists. All my work is European-based, and like my education that reflects my schooling. And I don't know Mexico anymore. I have memories of it. Some of them are sketched, some memories of it, but they're just fragments.
Do you have like a date by which you need to reapply for DACA if DACA is in any way renewed?
So my work permit, which gives me ability to work and come to the university and get paid and then maybe possibly teach workshops I did during my time here, expires in 2019. And if they want to cut it out, they can just cut it out beforehand. But technically, that's when my work permit will no longer work. But that's different from the deportation prevention thing, which it doesn't matter if my work permit's still good if they say we're going to enforce to pick you up. Also, if I am around any kind of violence or people breaking the law, even if it's not me, I could get arrested. If I'm in a raid, because they have done those over the last 5-6 years, they're just taking people, over 3 million people more, I could just get picked up and then I would have to prove that everything is good. And that means that I got an offer to do a show in San Isidro, and the right before I go to Los Angeles County Museum. So I'm saying no to go there, because if I go there and I get trapped in the detention center, I won't make it to Los Angeles County Museum and do workshops with all the families who are waiting for me. So I'm having to make real decisions over what places I go and what places I don't go.
Is San Isidro scary because it's that close to the border?
Yeah, I mean, if they're like, oh, this paper looks fake, let's take you in.
So you know, by several recent polls, somewhere north of 80% of Americans want the Dreamers to stay. I just wonder if that's cold comfort to you when you're aware of where things stand right now. Such a focus on people like you who came here as kids.
Well, the problem with that is that Dreamers only acquire people who were over a certain age. Like, it was like 16. They had to come in here at a certain age, and then they had to be under 30.
Mm-hmm.
That takes out people who have Ivy Leagues, who have Pulitzer Prize, who have all these things, who were over 30. When I applied for that guy, it was like early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So that left out a bunch of people. And then it leaves out all our parents and all our friends. So if I get to stay, you'll deport my parents or my friends and my buddies from school. And so, or my friends who, you know, don't have a great Ivy League education. So now we're separating people based on class. And I'm great that the polls say, yes, we want you. But I don't think anything has actively happened. I don't see people protesting by the thousands saying, hey, and it's no longer about us staying. It's about maybe us being considered like a second class labor force that is like restricted by a 10 to 15 year process after having spent most of our childhood and our adulthood under this sort of imprisonment.
Maria de los Angeles is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, artist and activist. What do you say to the people who take the straight law and order line? You know, they say you're nice people, you've done good things, but you're here illegally.
To them, I say I had nothing to do. I didn't want to come here. I battled my parents over this. I went to stay with my grandparents who stayed in Mexico. We didn't have a choice. And some of our parents just came to work, and they had the process to apply for something is so terrifying that you'd rather pay a lot of money to have someone bring you here because it's likely to be declined. Because we have to realize that it's class-based. And then to the people who say, I don't want you, I'm going to say, after $500,000 of investment in my education, do you really just want me to go? And I teach people who are from this country, who are citizens. My students love me. I teach at Pratt Institute. I teach at the Art Students League. And whenever I go, I'm doing workshops with families and kids. So as a business, I don't think you want to lose $500,000. And to those who are undocumented, who are right now like, my life is over, I'm going to say, this is the best country to get an education. People pay $60,000, $70,000 to come here from all over the world. So if we get a great education, we can go anywhere.
How did you respond to the election of Donald Trump? Because he was the one who clearly was going to do the things he has done. I mean, he's talked about ending the DACA program and changing legal immigration as well. I mean, so your response was fairly sharp, it sounds like.
Yeah, I did a wearable protest. I created like 30 garments that had language on them. We did a walk through the Trump Tower on October before the election. And for me, it kind of, like, I think if you come from a group that is having issues, whether you're poor white or you're of color or you're undocumented, you realize that there is a temperament against us. So it's not all positive, even though Ashland has been great to us. We've had a great reception from the Latino community and from everybody else here. We've been taken to listen to the music. I'm going to go see the Shakespeare thing. The university is great. The students were fantastic in the middle school that I went to. So I'm just saying that people love us and then people hate us.
Is there any middle ground?
That means that there has to be a real legislation, real law. And I don't want to have to live through another 15 years of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I think it's not, if we can prove we're good and we've done well and we're doing all these things, it should be not 15. It should be like 5 years, like a normal green card process. Be like, okay, you guys are okay. We're going to start the process. You're going to do these things. And then in 5 years, you can be a citizen. Because then you just have a secure labor force. And I'm going to be 29. If it's 15 years, I'll be 45. What happens to my retirement? What happens to my long planning for my retirement and my life? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get very deep into your life and then, you know, okay, go back to Mexico or come
on. Or,
yeah.
You know, you just don't plan ahead.
Right. I noticed we talked a little bit about the fact that your artwork includes some paper dresses, some very large paper dresses. One of them said right on it, deport me. And I wonder if it was a gradual process to get to that point, or did you just have a moment when the switch flicked and you said, that's it, I'm just...
Well, I'm interested in the aggressive language, not the imagery only, but the aggressive language put onto us, like people calling me illegal and kind of yelling in my face or saying that behind to other people. That language is really dark and it has an impact. And I'm like, when I put it on my body and you see it on me, does it contradict a little? And that was the whole idea. Like if you see somebody actually labeled and they're there in front of you and that you have to talk to them, then maybe you have to consider the black and whiteness of the whole thing.
We'd mentioned that there are like 1,400 works of art at the Schneider Museum. How much time should people allot to look at your work?
They should go in there for at least an hour, maybe take a little break, like go in, come out. And I've had a great feedback because it's really pleasant. The color is lovely. It's soft palette, pastels, and it feels pleasant. The images, some of them are really poetic and some are a little dark. But the room actually feels welcoming, which is what I wanted from it.
And do you have more classes? You've mentioned a whole bunch of things you're going to be doing, including the Shakespeare Festival. How much longer are you in Ashland yourself?
I leave tomorrow morning, first thing. But there's something going around. Maybe they'll bring me back next year.
Okay. Well, we will see. And best of luck to you. The display is called Transcending Myths. It hangs at the Schneider Museum of Art on the Southern Oregon University campus in Ashland. It's the work of Maria de Los Angeles, who is herself a dreamer. Thanks so much for joining us today.
And I just want to thank you for bringing me here. And I want to thank to the Ashland community and Oregon for having me, and to everybody who was really lovely to me, and to tell you that I'm actually really nice.
I don't think that needed to be explained, but thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.